actual effect on people of Cuba?
It's a huge effect. It influences daily life, the standard of living, the tranquility, the peace of people, and it is the aim of these coercive measures, to make life as difficult as possible for the Cuban people so that they can have political goals.
Carlos Fernandez de Cossío, I want to thank you so much for being with us, Cuba's Deputy Foreign Minister. We'll be doing an interview in Spanish and posting it online at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Thank you very much, Amy. It's 6 o'clock here on WUSB Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, and over the internet at WUSB.FM. It's a Tuesday evening, 6 o'clock. That could only mean one thing. It's time for another edition of Off the Wall. Yes, we're here. Another edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined over there by Kyle. And
yeah. You know what I like about you?
What?
You like to have fun, even for yourself. You amuse yourself, but it's fun to be around. You always find a fun thing to do.
There might be a compliment in there somewhere. I'm looking for it. Okay, yeah, I guess that's a good thing,
you
right?
You find interesting things. You have diverse interests, and you actually got entertained by something I was doing that isn't really normally something you're into. You watched the 24 Hours of Le Mans with me over the weekend.
Oh, my goodness. I forgot about that. It's been such a crazy week. I totally forgot that we spent a significant amount of time with a car race from Europe on in the background. But I'd never heard of this one before, Le Mans. It's in France, and you know, I still don't understand the whole thing because it's stage four of a whole bunch of them throughout the world. But this one, It goes for 24 hours. They start at 10 a.m. and they end at 10 a.m. And they're driving throughout. You see the sun go down and the headlights are on. They actually have headlights. They switch drivers. Not one driver going 24 hours. But still, it's really something to have. And we found a feed that has no commercials. It was just and British commentators. So it just felt really relaxing. And it was cool to have that on and to be a part of that. I don't know if the other rounds to take place in other cities in the world, if they're 24 hours as well. But this one seemed very special.
Yeah, it's one of the oldest automobile races. And I was just really impressed because you were getting into it. And I have been watching it year on year for a while since the introduction of the Hypercar series, which is a change in the name of the LMP1 category. And these are like the most advanced high-tech race cars and you know, biggest, baddest, fastest. And just like when we talk about FA Cup or we talk about other strange things, I kind of get into Eurovision. Let's just say different things or things mm-hmm. from the other side of the pond. I'm impressed how into it you got. You were as interested, and I just thank you for enjoying that because it is a bit different, but. There was a lot to like take in, and it's kind of complicated. Like you said, it's hard. I don't even know how to figure it out.
It's more complicated than Eurovision voting. I they have all the numbers up on the screen, and I swear I didn't understand what 9/10 of it meant. But still, it was just watching the beauty of it. As you know, you just would see this, cars going around in circles for a long time. Actually, it's more than a circle. It's like they seem to be going through a community because. They're going over a road where you see cars going back and forth. So obviously, it's in a town someplace. It's just really kind of fun.
Yeah, I think it's a 13-kilometer track or 8 miles. But thank you anyway. I just want to thank you for joining me in that little thing and having it on the background was really fun.
Well, I appreciate the acknowledgement. I do have a confession. I never watched the ending. I didn't see the ending at 10 a.m. So I don't even know who won. But I know Ferrari won, right?
They did.
But they were supposed to win.
Yeah, I had my eyes on Cadillac after the Hyperpole.
Yeah,
and
Cadillac
then...
did well. Well, first of all, they don't just do this 24-hour thing. They do a whole bunch of things before that. They do, free practice or something?
Several free practice, then qualifying, and then Hyperpole for the hypercars or the other class.
It's just nonstop driving for 3 or 4 days.
It's kind of building up to the pace that the actual event will have, but I'd never before seen as much coverage prior or as much of the entirety of the race without commercials, as you said. There was some good providers if you have some of the streaming services, and we found it, and it really allowed us to enjoy the actual show of it in entirety.
Yeah.
But, I was looking at Cadillac. I also really liked Peugeot and Aston Martin, mm-hmm. and I think that was it. I mean, always... Porsche, the Penske group is pretty amazing, but really cool that we enjoy that together.
Yes.
So
yes.
Find more cool stuff, and I'll get
well,
into it.
Well, you know, this past week, so much has happened, but I do want to focus on something else that was really cool, and I want to thank you for this, because we could have easily just been too busy or just not in the mood to participate in the No Kings Day. For some reason, they only went for an hour and a half, and it was about 45 minutes past the point where it started. So I said, Kyle, you want to just head down to the local one and see what it's like? It might be cool.
And we were aware of it because we had seen that other action just driving the other week, and someone advised us, hey, No Kings, this is coming up, and
yes.
Then it became more of a thing as we were following.
That's the first time we heard about it. Of course, we would have heard about it afterwards because everybody was talking about it. Over 2,000 demonstrations in the country.
It kind of made us curious, like, okay, if it's in so many places, let's at least check out what, if anything happens locally, we'll just go to the closest one to us. I think that's what a lot of people did.
Mm-hmm. And when we got there... We were blown away by how many people were there. It was, you know, we've seen demonstrations at that location before, several hundred. I would say it was well over 1,000 people, maybe even 2,000 people. I'm bad at estimating, but it was more people. There were so many people there they couldn't fit on the corner anymore. They had to go across the street. And usually across the street are the Trump demonstrators, the counter demonstrators. They weren't there this time. There was almost no visibility for counter demonstrators. I think I saw one truck pass by that just had a sign saying liberals are stupid. And, you know, you can say that and still participate in the demonstration. So I don't even know if they were a counter-demonstrator. So it was just such a good atmosphere, though. All these people, all ages, and just a really, really good mood.
I was so impressed. The adjacent parking lots and some of the shopping areas and strip malls were really, I mean, it was hard to find parking.
It was
a challenge, people
yes.
were everywhere. It was not four, maybe like five corners of the street, as you pointed out. And I'm so impressed with Suffolk County and with all the signs. That's the best part of these things.
Oh, my God, all
people
the signs.
People expressing their ideas and the humor in that. Because if you and I'll get to the other part of not being alone in witnessing what's going on in the world.
Uh-huh.
But you get camaraderie, you get ideas and funny sayings and a sense of humor. You can laugh a little bit at just the wonderful takes and jokes people make on their signs. And that alone is worth making the trek out to an event like this. And as was said about other events, it's just the beginning. It's not the end. It's how you start meeting people. It's how you start finding out what people are upset about and what direction the whole of it may go. And being tapped into that by attending really changed my outlook on the current situation. And the other thing I want to go back to was saying is that it's bad to suffer alone.
Mm.
There is incredible social isolation right now. I think it is partially a remnant of the pandemic. People got really thrown off their social networks, their routines. A lot of things changed for a long period of time, and people, I think, have still been rebuilding that. The politics that we kind of came right into after a lot of that, of the midterms and the election, were kind of already underway, and I don't know. It could have gone all kinds of ways, but given how it went, I think there was some dejection, and that the kind of hangover after November for the Democrats, for the left, as it were, or people that just simply are independent thinkers and don't agree with what was being sold by the GOP. This was different. This was a rejuvenation. And a resurgence, and it just seeing it locally and then catching up with all the other stuff going on elsewhere, it really gave me, as I said, a new outlook on what is possible. And that's the point of actions
yes.
like that.
Yeah, no, that's entirely correct.
In fact, I was talking to someone after the fact that didn't go, and they had their reasons, and I think that's totally okay, but it saddened me for them that they didn't get to participate, because some of the people that are most tuned in and plugged into these things, to politics, to the impacts on different communities of bad policies, I think they're the most sensitive to what's going on and have a feeling of things not getting better. I think they're some of the smartest people. And because they're so smart, they think it's not even worth it, right? They're so used to the patterns, used to the disappointment in certain ways, or the craven and ugliness of politics these days. But I felt it was just a missed opportunity for some of the people that maybe needed to be there the most.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're some of the smartest people that, you know, you would want collaborating and thinking about policy and thinking about the future and thinking about what could be had and what could be made of this country instead of how we could dismantle it in ever uglier ways. So I really hope there's other actions and that people that maybe missed out or weren't interested or didn't think it was for them or thought it, you know, it's silly to be, you know, making signs and doing puppets and costumes at a moment when things are so, so bad. But some of that levity can be a jolt in the arm and can be a way for people to see a future that's different than the occurring state of the world.
Yeah, you know, it's easy for us to feel like we're just, you know, talking into the wind and that there's really nobody out there. In fact, that's what we're sort of programmed to feel that way so that we don't think we have too much power. Going to something like this makes you realize that while it feels like we're constantly losing, there are so many people out there that we are in sync with. So many people out there that feel the same pain we do, that feel the same outrage we do, and that are as angry as we are about the way things are going. And for that one day to get together with those people just for a moment and share our outrage. And I think even eclipsing the people who showed up with the people driving by honking their horns. It was nonstop. And I didn't hear anybody or see anybody say anything negative. It was such a love fest. It really was. It went on the entire time we were there and past, because there were people who were still there when we left. And this was echoed throughout the entire country. If you look, you'll see, you know, cities had hundreds of thousands of people. They estimate throughout the country, and you know, I'm not sure how accurate this is, but I've heard it from several reliable sources, 5 million people. Did you hear that, Kyle? 5 million people? I wasn't hallucinating that.
That was one of the higher numbers of estimations, of crowd counting, I guess, as a field of statistics or something. So that's what has been thrown around. I don't know if it was more or less.
Well, if my math is correct, that's something like almost 2% of the nation, which sounds like a tiny number, but it's really not. They say it's the biggest demonstration, overall demonstration, in U.S. history. All right, that eclipses Vietnam, that eclipses civil rights movement. It's not a competition, but this just goes to show you how engaged people are, even though you may not know it. And I think that is what can give us hope and make us start turning around and doing good things again and making change however we can. This was a tremendous start, and hopefully it's the first of many. And we find our voice, we find our power, we fight back, because this is this week definitely has a lot of instances of people fighting back. I mean, the senator in California, this happened on Thursday, Senator Padilla, Alex Padilla, he was basically thrown to the ground for daring to ask a question of, what was it, Kristi Noem?
Homeland
Security czar?
Correct. Yeah, she was giving a press conference.
Giving a press conference in a federal building in California, in this guy's jurisdiction. All right? So right away, you should know who the senator is in your jurisdiction. You know? And pretty much, I think anybody in California would know that. These idiots are feigning that they had no idea who he was. He's just this stranger who was lunging towards the stage and being disruptive. Problem is, there's video, you see him clearly identifying himself. You see him not lunging. You see him asking a question. And the response to that, inside a secure building, everyone's gone through security to get into that building in the first place. All right, so there's no way somebody could be in there posing some sort of a threat. Everybody has been screened. So this person is asking a question, and the response in the United States, 2025, is to tackle him to the ground, push him out of the room, make him kneel, and handcuff him. A U.S. senator. And like he said almost immediately after he was released, when they finally figured out who he was, he said, imagine what they could do to somebody who was not a U.S. senator, you know? imagine just how far these people will go. And this is an example, a clear, frightening example of that. I don't think any time in the history of this country has a United States senator been treated that way. And, yeah, he's Hispanic. That might have been what made them panic. I don't know. but it's disgusting. It's disgusting to treat people this way. And, of course, I don't want to take away attention from Kristi Noem and her lies that he was challenging. But all of this is challenging the current heartless policy of simply grabbing people left and right, innocent people, people who are not guilty of any crime, who are trying to pursue their citizenship status in this country, and being grabbed by these goons and forced either into a detention center or a foreign prison or a country that they're trying to escape. So that certainly fueled some of the outrage. Then, of course, there were the horrible events of Saturday morning in Minnesota. And this, it's gotten a fair amount of news coverage, but honestly, you know, the horrible anti-Semitic attack in Colorado a few weeks ago, where a bunch of people were wounded by a crazy person with a flamethrower, yes, I think that got more outrage and more attention than elected officials being gunned down, assassinated, because they're Democrats in Minnesota. That's what happened on Thursday. I mean, I'm sorry, on Saturday. It's a nightmare like you could not possibly imagine. But it's real. This guy drove around in a fake police car in the middle of the night, going to elected officials' houses, getting them to open the door, and then opening fire on them. He killed one representative and her husband, wounded a state senator and his wife, and tried at least two other houses where people fortunately were not home. And the cops really did a good job here because they were able to figure out something like this was happening when they came upon the first crime scene and were able to at least stop the murderous rampage from continuing. It took 2 days to catch him, but they did. Now, that did not stop the deluded right wing in this country from spreading lies about what was happening. Literally accusing the governor of ordering the assassination, Governor Walz, you know, the former vice presidential candidate with Kamala Harris.
Yeah, Tim Walz.
Yeah. Right-wing social media personality Mike Cernovich, 1.5 million followers, said that Walz ordered the assassination, has not taken that post down, continues to advance the claims, saying yesterday, Democrats know they are now seen as the party of political violence, so their propaganda agents are trying to shift the blame. It won't work. And Laura Luma, close confidant to President Trump. She said Walz's goons are now assassinating lawmakers who support legislation Walz opposes. This guy had a list of Democrats that he was going to assassinate. This guy could not be any more pro-Trump. You know, none of that mattered, though, when this was happening. When I was watching the initial newscast, at least the legitimate outlets weren't talking about party affiliation or anything stupid like that. They were talking about a crazy person out there assassinating elected officials. But now that the dust has settled, it becomes quite clear what this actually was. And yet, the Republicans are so deluded that they can't even acknowledge that this was somebody who was completely deluded and who bought into a lot of their propaganda. And Trump will not even call the governor to express condolences. That is where we are today. That we literally have people being gunned down because of their political parties. And the president won't even acknowledge that this is something worthy of conversation. It's disgusting. It really is so disgusting. And like I said, I know there's been attention drawn to it in the media. I don't think there's enough. I really don't. This is actual murder. This is actual third world dictatorship type of actions here. It's arrived. We cannot make this normal. Then today, something rather interesting happened. Have you guys been following the New York City mayoral race? It's getting kind of interesting. The primary is a week from today, and you've got all kinds of interesting people running here.
Yeah, I hadn't been paying attention. I think you had the debate on, and we watched a little bit of it. I was just in the background. And I know some of the characters. Mayor Adams didn't show up to that.
Well, he's not a Democrat
anymore.
Because
he's in, yeah, right, exactly.
You know, we warned people about this back when he was chosen by Democrats over the progressive candidates. You just elected a cop. You're going to regret this.
But he was invoked throughout the debate
in
contrast, and that was basically what most of the candidates were comparing presenting their platform in comparison to. And you got to know a little bit some of the personalities. Of course, Cuomo is a former governor, is running.
Mm-hmm.
So he was there as well. And of course, there's been ads. I've seen some of the ads.
Oh, boy, the ads.
And there's a couple things I've noticed. I'll let you continue on with introducing maybe some of them. But I've noticed some design things and some commercials that are interesting, other than Cuomo's attack ads, which are also out there, and his other campaign ads in the mix.
Andrew Cuomo is easily the most dislikable of the candidates, I think. It's just the way he carries himself. And, of course, everybody is attacking him based on his history. But the thing is, you know, if he were to win, there's worse things that can happen. Let me put it that way. I would put Adams ahead of Cuomo as far as bad ideas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
as it's played out, especially with this regime?
Yeah. There's no easy way to say that because I don't support him. I don't think he's the right choice. But if it comes down to it, this is a ranked choice primary. So you get to choose your first candidate, your second, third, fourth, etc. And that way, if the one you voted for is eliminated, then the second one is what your vote counts for. People are doing this intelligently. For instance, Zohan Mamdani, who is the progressive, the most progressive, that is, and Brad Lander kind of cross-endorsed each other, meaning that if you support me, then put the other guy second, and vice versa. And that's kind of like a coalition. It's intelligent. It's the most intelligent thing I've seen Democrats do in a while. But it kind of keeps Cuomo out. You know, if you're in second and third place, but you're supporting each other, all of a sudden, you're a lot more powerful, having that alliance. And I just hope that no matter who gets elected or nominated for the election, because the election isn't until November, I just hope they support whoever, even if it's Cuomo. I know it's hard to say this, but even if it's Cuomo, you have to support the winner, or you'll either get Adams or a Republican. And I don't think anybody wants that. Well, anybody that has any sense in my eyes. okay, so anyway, today what happened, Brad Lander. Now, yeah, I had an issue with a mayor named Brad for some reason. It just bothered me. But, you know, I think he might have won the election today. I really do. he is New York City comptroller, and he was arrested today by federal agents. Sounds familiar, huh? He was at an immigration courthouse in Lower Manhattan. What was his crime? He was trying to escort a migrant out of the building to prevent his arrest. He was observing proceedings at the city's main immigration courthouse, 26 Federal Plaza. An increasing number of migrants who appear for court have been arrested in recent weeks by ICE. A spokesman for the Department of Homeland Security, and take this with a pillar of salt, they said that Mr. Lander had assaulted and impeded a law enforcement officer. Videos taken by reporters at the courthouse show Mr. Lander standing by a migrant man in a hallway on the 12th floor when several men who appeared to be law enforcement officers, some wearing masks, pushed past a crowd in the hallway to arrest the migrant. Now, keep in mind, these people, they wear masks, they don't identify themselves, they don't have name tags, you know, and we're supposed to just stand by and let them do their thing. I don't think so. Not in New York, anyway. Lander repeatedly asked the agents whether they have a judicial warrant. That's the only one that matters, judicial warrant, as opposed to the kind that ICE pulls out of their hats, which is basically one that they got out of a Cracker Jack box. It doesn't have any legal merit. He refused to let go of the migrant as the agents tried to push him towards the elevators. And Lander said, "I will let go when you show me the judicial warrant." His right hand remaining on the man's body. Now, that's not assaulting a federal agent unless they're saying that that migrant is now an extension of a federal agent because they're touching him. I don't follow the logic. He's doing exactly the right thing because a judicial warrant, well, that's legal, you know? And he said he would let go if he saw that. They didn't have that. So they tried to pry Lander away, and they ultimately separated him from the migrant, pushing him up against the wall by the elevators, and they placed handcuffs on him. "You don't have the authority to arrest U.S. citizens," Lander says repeatedly. "I'm not obstructing. I'm standing right here in the hallway. I asked to see the judicial warrant." So they took him away. Keep in mind, a senator, now a city controller, candidate for mayor, all in the space of 1 week. This is getting real. This is getting incredibly real. But it's good to see people standing up to this crap and saying, "No, we're not going to just stand by and let you do this. We're not going to stand by and let you intimidate people." These folks are going to court. They're doing everything within the law. And you're going to trap them there? You're going to grab them and send them on a bus to God knows where and not tell anybody? You know, I've seen many, many news reports from all around the country about ICE's actions. And the one thing that I always hear from the reporter is that we reached out to ICE for comment and we didn't hear anything back. They never respond. They're this faceless, oppressive entity. It's like talking to the Borg. You know, you will never get an answer from them. They will just move in, grab somebody, then disappear. So, yeah, I think that definitely moved Brad Lander up in the eyes of many people. Definitely in my eyes. Zohran Mamdani is still up there. I think he might even surpass Cuomo at some point.
I noticed both of them for their ads. I'm not participating in this election, but just seeing the ads, I wanted to point out Zohran Mamdani uses some very interesting typesetting that I think is distinct from most other campaign signage and icon, logo type or something. It's orange and red, and it looks very stylized. It looks like Zoltar or like something, like a psychic or like a. It's very like, or like a party announcement or something. But it's so unusual. It's just stylized. It's not. It's very simple, but it stands out. And something simple is just the way it's typed. When that flashes on, I didn't even realize I was watching a campaign ad in some instances because there was something, about the shape. It just wasn't as angular and kind of boring and dry. And I thought that was pretty smart to just use something unique, use warm colors. And that alone, I think, is really clever. And the other thing is Brad
Lander.
Lander. I'm mixing up the two names because you're talking about the
coalition. There's a lot of names.
The coalition.
And, you know, this is
he,
go ahead.
He has an ad where he's riding around on a roller coaster doing all these, like, office tasks. And then he starts eating a hot dog on the roller coaster.
No, I saw that. That was...
He looks so calm and collected on the... This is like a Coney Island, the wooden roller coasters,
uh-huh.
A really famous New York thing. And I was like, that is a New Yorker. Like, he's got a legal pad. He's doing all this stuff on the roller coaster. I thought that was really a funny ad. But I don't think any of the other ads really stood out to me. Or there's other ads that stood out, but not quite so much. And then to have that in my mind, something fun and like a circus or Coney Island, like a carnival, those kinds of fun or just interesting visuals, to then hear about this action at the immigration court really is kind of an amazing scale to go from one to the other. I mean, it just really runs the gamut in my mind for who that person is and builds character for recognizing his campaign and standing out, you know, more so than others.
We just got a bulletin that Kristi Noem, who we were just talking about, has been transported to a D.C. area hospital, and I don't have any more info on that. That's just what we got right now. I'm going to look into it, see what I can find out in
really?
The minutes we have left. Yeah, I wouldn't make this up. But getting back to the mayoral race, a lot of names. It is confusing. You can be forgiven for, you know, not knowing who everybody is. I thought it was pretty incredible that we have Zoran Mamdani, initials ZM, and also Zelnora Miri, initials ZM. Both candidates. I think that's just I just like that for some reason. Two ZMs, an unusual set of initials. It's going to be an interesting race ahead in the week ahead that we have, we'll just have to see what comes of it. What will happen next? I'm sorry, I'm losing my train of thought as I'm trying to.
It is coming up though. It's midsummer when the election is.
No, it's next week. It's next Tuesday.
That's like pre-midsummer, right?
I don't know, but the primary is next, and it's assumed that whoever wins the primary will win the mayoral race. I don't know if that's a wise assumption because you still have Adams in there, not to be confused with the other Adams who's running for mayor. Oh, it's so complex.
Well, the whole thing snuck up on me, but
yeah.
I'm sure everyone out there listening is prepared and thinking thoughtfully about who they would like to select.
All right. Also, yeah, I don't want to overlook this. Israel bombed Iran. Oh, my God. I mean, this is how things played out, at least the way I saw it.
It'll never work.
Look, we had a deal. We had a deal back in the Obama days, and it was a decent deal. Iran was following it by all accounts, and Trump ripped it up. Trump violated the deal, ripped it up, and Iran said, okay, we're going to go back to doing what we did. I know Biden was trying to get them to come back, had some success, and even Trump in his second term was trying to have some kind of a deal worked out with them, which was weirdly very similar to the deal that he ripped up. I guess he just wanted his name on it. And when that didn't go exactly how he wanted, and you know, it seems like such a trivial disagreement, such as you know, them coming in saying, good morning. It's like, well, it's 12 o'clock. It's good afternoon. That's it. We can't talk to you anymore. We're leaving because we can't agree on the time of day. It's something ridiculous like that. It wasn't a major disagreement, but it was all it took for the U.S. to walk out and say, that's it. We're done. We're not talking to you anymore. Oh, and by the way, everybody in the region evacuate. So that tells me that we had some kind of a deal with Israel to say, okay, guys, we're going to torpedo these quote-unquote negotiations, and you just go in and do whatever you want. And that's exactly what happened. They bombed Iran just because they were developing a nuclear weapon. I know that's bad. We don't want them to do that. But, you know, who are we to say who can develop what? I know what we prefer. We prefer they not have that. I prefer Israel not have nuclear weapons, but they do. And, you know, all of a sudden, at this particular time, in this tense period of time of history, you're going to bomb Iran and Israel. How many countries can you possibly attack at the same time? It's pretty crazy. Then I found out that Israel actually had a plan to kill the spiritual leader of Iran, the Ayatollah Khomeini, which is about the dumbest thing anybody has ever come up with. You know, if you kill someone's religious leader, you have declared the kind of holy war that will not end in any of our lifetimes and will probably spell the end of the state of Israel.
Well, no, that's the point. Is it'll never work. I am cynical enough to believe that they wouldn't do this to Iran if they knew it would do something. You know what I'm saying? Like, if this would actually fix the problem, I don't think they would want to do it, because having the problem substantiates their program, their violence. It's the same thing everywhere.
Well, it seems like Netanyahu just wants to make things worse, because if you look at his actions and what he has accomplished, they all have made things much, much worse.
Well, and the cheerleading for this is like, in our country is, yeah, we should support Israel such that, you know, they go in and finish the job and do this and I'm maintaining that actually won't ever happen. There's no sense of that, and that's why they did this, because they're only going to do it if it won't fix anything.
Well, the weird part about all this is that the person who talked them out of killing the Ayatollah was Trump. Trump, the voice of reason. I never thought I'd hear that. But, you know, it could very well have averted World War III or the end of Israel, all kinds of things, by simply not doing something so incredibly idiotic. But it didn't last, because today Trump escalated his rhetoric against Iran. Yesterday he was saying he wanted them to come to peaceful terms. Now he's basically threatening Iran. He said that we know exactly where the so-called supreme leader is hiding. He is an easy target, but is safe there. We are not going to take him out, kill, at least not for now. What an evil bastard to talk that way about somebody. You know, I don't have much affinity to the Ayatollah, don't get me wrong. But I do recognize that millions and millions of Iranians do. And if you talk this way and threaten in this manner, and God forbid actually carry out such a demented scheme, you are basically making fire the permanent element of the region. I mean, I just don't know where this can go from here. These people do not understand how to deal with anyone who is not just like them. It's sickening. It really is. So, yeah, so now Trump is directly threatening the Ayatollah. Do you realize, you know, that makes all of the leaders of the countries that we are allied with fair targets as well? That's the world we are painting for ourselves.
That is what is being communicated by all of these kinds of actions. Really makes, like, existing anywhere seem ever more fragile. Like, just being at all in the face of state powers this reckless, this violent, and whew, irreverent,
well,
disrespectful.
It's dealing with a bunch I don't want to say toddlers. It's a little bit above toddlers. Preteens. You know, basically people just issuing threats because they're mad about something. We saw the same thing, actually, before the weekend. There was that idiotic sheriff in Florida who basically said, we will kill you. We will kill you if you get in our way. To the demonstrators. You know, Mayor Adams in New York City was not much better. He was just threatening the demonstrators before they even started marching, as if they are the ones causing violence or destruction. They aren't. There are other people that do that.
I don't think individuals like this are peaceful people. We need to stop treating them as peaceful people. They're not. They're simply not. They don't have any kind of proximity to people who are peaceful.
Even Governor DeSantis, he basically said, if a demonstrator gets in front of your car and you run him over, that's the demonstrator's fault. The governor of the state of Florida made it okay to run over demonstrators. It's sick what these people are. I mean, how did this ever happen? Well, we elected them. We put them in power. Now we're seeing what that means. And we have to fix that quickly. The world is falling apart. Our cities are falling apart. It's not because people are out there with picket signs or blocking traffic or anything like that. It's because of the violence. And look where the violence is coming from. It's not hard.
Yeah, they have all the tools, all the technology, and they're given unprecedented levels of power by absconding any kind of supervision, any kind of deliberation, any kind of negotiations. It's might over what's right. I mean, they're just running, like, steamrolling citizenry. Peace, you know, the world watches this, and then we're to be surprised that there are resistive forces, people trying to push back against it. You do these kinds of things, you do not act fairly, you will experience resistance to it. It's human nature. You cannot push people into a corner under the auspices of free and democratic societies or some sort of defense. Everything you do is defense. Well, we're defending. We have the right to defend. Yeah, you can call it whatever you want, but it's abject violence. And when people know it, and when it's firsthand, they don't need your definition of it. It's visceral. And they're going to react as any human would.
Okay, update on that Kristi Noem story. According to a statement by DHS spokeswoman Tricia McLaughlin, Secretary Noem had an allergic reaction today. She was transported to the hospital out of an abundance of caution. She is alert and recovering. Must have inhaled a bit of democracy. I don't know. But, okay. I'm sure she'll be back on her feet in no time. We have a letter, and you can write a letter to us, too, otw@2600.com. This is a little perplexing. Okay, let's read this. This is from Dave, longtime listener and reader of 2600. I was disappointed to hear you say that Governor Newsom is grossly incompetent, especially without any discussion or facts supporting this opinion. Your words matter, and while I'd like to think us listeners are strong-minded enough to form our own opinions, that may not be possible for someone whose only exposure to the issue are your words. Dave, I quite agree. The only thing I don't really agree with is saying that. I didn't say that. I'm pretty sure, Kyle, it must have been you. Did you say Governor Newsom is grossly incompetent?
No. I think I remember arguing that he was not given the chance to handle his state, and I was talking about Title 10 and Title 32,
yeah,
and the powers of governors over their own National Guard and what supersedes what.
Well, let me finish with the letter.
Yeah, I don't really remember directly attacking him.
Maybe that, no, I don't think we did. I'm not sure what this is referring to. I'm not sure on the goal of the statement either. While I don't, while I don't agree with everything Newsom has done in the past, he's been dealt an impossible situation, excuse me, in California, and I'd argue he's doing pretty well given that he has what he has to manage: water crises, corporate greed, and a state that is 25% of what? Many with a lot of wealth to influence. Okay, I could probably have read that better. And right now, he's one of the few going toe-to-toe with this administration. I agree with that, too. While many politicians have spoken out, I haven't seen anyone else tell Taco Man to just get it over with. Arrest me, move on. If you need someone's head to scalp, then do it to me. Stop messing with these kids. Stop messing with four-year-olds, kids in elementary school. To us Californians, he's a leader we desperately need and believe in, and we can put aside our disagreements on handling specific issues in the past. To have him casually undermined by two people I deeply respect, especially as we stare down fascism, is disheartening. Yes, I agree. We didn't do it, though. I'd be mad at us, too, if we said that, because, you know, he I think, is a good candidate for president in 2028.
Although I think there was, I mean, the most maybe we, the furthest we've gone maybe ever is talking about his move to the center. And a lot of people have been really focused on tempering their perspectives on certain sort of culture issues and that kind of thing, culture war hot buttons that are in exceedingly dumb in most cases to really focus on, and mostly bait from the GOP. And I think he had some interviews on a podcast and this sort of like pivot to try to appeal to people that probably already are going to disagree or not vote for him just seemed like a waste. But I don't know that we ever, like, found issue with his competence.
Let me finish this letter. I just wanted to let you both know I continue to appreciate what you both do, but I ask, now's the time to build community, not tear down the little we have left. We don't have the luxury of undermining our leaders if we don't have better options who are willing to actively take up the role, especially ones that, from where I stand, are plenty competent to lead us right now through this hell. Thank you for listening, Dave. Dave, I agree 100% everything you said, except for saying that we said that, because I don't think we did. And if you could point us to where we said that, then I will definitely engage in some kind of therapy that lets me remember what I say. But I don't think we said that. And I take issue with people who won't support a candidate because they disagree with them on one particular issue. That's something the far left does quite a bit, and that's one of the major problems I have with them. They wind up using the same talking points as people on the far right. So I could see that happening, but I don't see that happening with us.
And someone could do something that is incompetent and not be incompetent. Like, he may have had a moment that was a demonstration of that level.
The point is, I don't think we said
it. That's not the same thing.
Gotta move on.
Really
gotta move on. One story that we only have a couple minutes for, and this is really upsetting me, because finally Brookhaven Town got a dispensary. Yeah, we finally got a dispensary. It's in East Setauket. It's called Strong Strains. It opened at the early part of the month. And now they're trying to shut it down. They are trying to shut it down. Dr. Surindu Sandhu, a doctor runs this place, said yesterday his recreational marijuana shop, Strong Strains, has no reason to be closed, despite a cease and desist letter he received last week from a lawyer representing the property manager for the Stony Brook Technology Park. The two-page letter from Patchogue lawyer Brian Egan said Strong Strains violates the park's rules, which bar activities which violate federal law. Okay, clearly this is some kind of Trumpian tactic here to shut down something which is entirely legal. The town of Brookhaven approved this. Suffolk County, New York State, it's legal. And just because this person says it's not legal federally, they don't have cause to shut it down. And it's not like they didn't, they weren't made aware that this was going to happen in the first place, that they were opening a dispensary there. Now, Sandhu, a retired physician, said he had no plans to shutter the business. The dispensary received a state operating license earlier this month after obtaining Brookhaven Town permits, state and town officials have said. Everything is done legally. We visited this place.
Yeah, we've been there. I really hope he just hands a letter to his lawyer and completely ignores the entirety of this. It seems like a trap to set some sort of precedent base and have the feds try to rule on something. I would completely ignore it and maybe as a backup try to talk to some landlords in the vicinity, hopefully like across the street or something, really. So in the event he has to move at all, it's still nearby, and a friendly reminder of that to that landlord that they are missing revenue from him being a renter, because that is really it's pretty petty, and I don't understand why you would allow a business to move in and sign contracts.
Well, Sandhu said he notified the property managers about the business as he sought a zoning variance from the Brookhaven Town Board of Zoning Appeals. They can say whatever they want, but they had the time, and they didn't say anything. I am so sick of this crap. I really am. So hopefully he fights this. Hopefully people support him, and this nonsense can stop.
Yeah, seriously, the answer to the letter is no.
Well, so far, that's what it is. That's exactly what it is. Okay, we are out of time. Excuse me. I hope I get over whatever it is I have. And you can write to us with your opinions and thoughts and feedback and all sorts of other things. otw@2600.com.
Did you inhale a fly?
Maybe.
You know what? I bet it was one of those strong strains.
I think I had the flu. I thought I had Lyme disease. Then I thought I had the flu. I feel better now. But obviously, I'm not entirely 100%.
Yeah, it might be fascism.
It could be a good dose of fascism.
It tickles the throat a little.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thanks for your patience. We'll be back next week. Please keep listening to WUSB. Good night.